My name's Damien Swaby, and I'm here on the Dope Science Show, the best podcast out there today.
Yeah! Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for listening to the Dope Science Show podcast. This is episode 4. I'm super appreciative to have your ears and your minds. Thank you for all your feedback and shares on social media. You can find the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Please, 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 I have to say this. Please comment on iTunes so it can help with the ranking, so more ears can hear the show, and the bigger it gets, the better the show should get. Right? I am also super grateful to my fellow podcasters who have shown support to me. It is so awesome because I listen to their shows too. Two in particular get special mention because they listened and gave me feedback, which I'm so appreciative of. It really means a lot. Oh, I want to always say thank you. I really, really appreciate you guys. And please, please, please comment, like, share, and give me your feedback. I just want to do this, create this, make it better and better. The more dope, the more I can live up to the name. That's really the plan. So, on this episode, I talked to my good friend, David Beck. I know I'm always talking to my good friends because that's who I started with. And I recorded this in the summer, but I'm finally getting it out. Just fits the timing. In this episode, David Beck, a father, engineer, photographer, bone marrow donor. He's just a real Renaissance man. We talk about his love for science and what inspires a little boy from Mississippi to become an engineer. We talk about how he overcame his challenges with math. So many people think they can't work in a STEM field because they're not good at math. I hear that all the time. Well, that's a false belief. You can do it anyway. You just have to find your niche. So we talk about that. We really spent a good amount of time talking about a program called First Robotics. It's a team-building program where kids build robots and compete against each other. I'm super excited about that. So excited, in fact, that I looked at my local chapter to see about starting my own team with my daughter. It's actually pretty easy to start a team. It's less than $500. I think I said it was $375, in fact. You only need 2 students and 2 adult mentors, and a lot of companies actually sponsor the teams. So it seems pretty easy as far as the level of entry. It just takes your effort and focus from there. Overall, from the episode, I really felt like I learned a lot, and super inspired by David. He is infinitely curious about all things in life, and I try to be that way too. I say I'm super curious. I think that's my talent, my curiosity, and my addiction to learning, and we share a similar desire for that. I hope I can have him on the show again. So with all that said, let's start the show.
Thank you.
great. I'm great. And just for everyone to know, this is my friend David Beck. He's an awesome gentleman that I've been following for a few years online. He's into science. He's a good dad. He's just seems to have his stuff together. So I thought it would be really cool to just have a cool conversation about science, STEM, music, and whatever else he wants to talk about. So I appreciate your time. I'm doing good. So I just had to say that little intro there, but I'm doing great.
That's good. Good to hear. Southern California is kind of warm here in D.C. area.
Maybe we have the same weather right now. It's warm and humid.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well, usually don't humid in San Diego. I kind of miss San Diego. But I digress in that comment. So.
Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you work in STEM, or you have a background in STEM, right?
Yes, I'm an engineer. I've been an engineer for 20 years. Prior to the 20 years, I co-opted a number of companies in the defense and aerospace area as a engineer. But my story is, I was 6 years old. I was sitting in front of my TV with my parents in the small house we lived in Mississippi when I grew up, and I saw one of the space shuttles take off. And when I saw the space shuttle take off, I said, that's what I want to be at. I want to be on that ship. I want to fly up there in the unknown. So ever since I was five, 6 years old, I've been a Trekkie. I've been a Star Wars fanatic. Because, you know, I was born in 72, so 78 is when the, Star Wars came out. And I've been crazy about exploration of science and what's out there in the unknown ever since. So I guess you can say it was in my DNA from the get-go. I didn't know it was there until I got the trigger and then realized that's what I like. So I figured
that's
if I could.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's very awesome. I figured if I couldn't, you know, I couldn't fly a plane and go into space, which is probably impossible. I wouldn't say impossible, but, you know, percentage-wise, it's probably pretty close to being impossible at this point in my life. But I could definitely design the vehicle and do the engineering for it.
Yeah.
And probably get a passenger's ticket. You know, kind of like run an Amtrak from New York to D.C., get a ticket and ride the train and see what happens.
Yeah. Would you, if you had the opportunity to ride on a space shuttle, would you, as just a, like a tourist?
Yeah, I would. I think it's important that we look at it from our standpoint here as humans on this planet, that if you grew up in a community where you are, you know, where it's a certain number of people and you live a certain way, that there is more to the universe than that, you know, even from a
big world,
psychological
right?
standpoint. Yeah, you know, it's beyond religion, beyond everything else. I mean, we exist. You look at an ant. An ant lives in a small space in the ground. They, you know, they have a, you know, they live in a hive like a bee. And they all work together. But if you look at it from their standpoint, the world is huge to them. So us, the world looks huge to us, but this is small compared to the overall view of everything that exists. I think the curiosity of creation and all
right?
things are created. That's why they venture out and they search for things. Like you see ants, you see animals,
yeah.
and you find them in different places that they didn't really belong when they first were conceived.
That's true.
That's the way it is. I mean, even birds, they fly across the globe when they different seasons. So it's just, I think that's just inhibitiveness of our DNA to search out and see things. So that's part of me. I really, really see that's a big part of mine. So
that's so awesome. I believe curiosity leads to creativity and into the circle and it goes round and round. And it's really cool that you talked about the animals because I never really thought of them as explorers, you know. And
yeah.
when humans first, you know, societies evolved, we were nomads and,
exactly.
you know, explorers as well. And it's only more recently that we're so stationary where people think their whole world is in their, like, 10 block radius or wherever they live, you know?
Yeah. Good thing you mentioned that. About a year and a half ago, I did a DNA. I did a DNA study
yeah.
with Ancestry.com DNA. And I went back and, did a saliva test and I wanted to know where I came from. Cause the curiosity of want to go out of the nest as a child, crawl out as a baby and learn how to walk and then run same curiosity that we go forward with our lives as humans. It's the same curiosity that pulls us to find out where we came from. So I did a DNA analysis with Ancestry.com, and then I found out that, you know, my mom told me that I was Native American. I said, right. Well, you know, my great-grandmother was a Native American. She thought she was, and she wore the moccasins. She wore the clothes. When she passed away at my grandmother's house, everything about her was Native American. She didn't wear regular clothes like regular people back when I was a kid. She wore all Indian, Native American, ancient Indian crafted clothes, even right down to her shoes, the way her hair and everything was done. But, you know, historically, a lot of things have happened in this world. That's, I mean, man's evolution, you know. So when I did my DNA analysis, I found that there's no Native American in my DNA. That's what Ancestry says. Now, I might do the 21 and you thing, that the new one that came out. I had a friend that told me yesterday, 2 days ago, that they were doing that. But just to get a cross comparison, because I think it's good to get a cross comparison of your DNA. But the subjectiveness of the DNA and what it said was that majority of my DNA is from Congo, and then Nigerian, and a couple other tribes, and then Eastern European, and then at the end, I think around 5% was cave dwellers and farmers and, you know, things of that nature. Like, you know, if you go back a million years where everybody was in the field dwellers, you know, native people who were, you know, trying to find their ways and get a path to, you know, conclusion where they're all together working in groups and then building cities and stuff like that. So that's how they break it down. So ever since I did that, I've been searching and trying to, you know, relate to that, my DNA, to find out where I come from. Because as important it is for you to know where you're going, you need to know where you came from. So it kind of gives you a instillness of pride.
It does. It does. It gives you a sense of self.
You always get to learn, too. Yes.
That you came from something. And then you, that's why representation in media and history and education is so important, because it gives people a foundation that they pull from whenever they're looking for inspiration of how to overcome challenges, or inspiration of brilliance, or something like that. People tend to look for the past for good things, you know, that they can say that this is what has brought them where they are, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, in a given day, everybody sits in a point in their life. Several times it's happened in a day with people where they sit and they wonder, you know, what decision should I make? I'm in a situation where I'm not happy. I'm in a situation where I feel like, you know, what should I do about this and make the best educated, logical decision? And a lot of that plays out based on heritage of your DNA, based on your education level, and based on where you're at and your point of maturity. So I think it's important that, from a perspective of as a human, that we know each of these points, and necessary when we go through situations in life on a daily basis. We don't think about all this, but it does have a play in it. When you do think about the decisions that you make in your life, you think about, oh, okay, let me think about this decision I did make that I wasn't thinking, or I was thinking when I made it, and how does it play with everything that I am up to this point in my life, and that I'm created of, so that I can see, does it have a, there's a path on the decisions I'm making based upon what I'm made of and what I've been accustomed to, what I've been educated with, what I've seen with my eyes and felt with my heart. It has a play on what you do in your life. I think sometimes we don't put the relevance together, but it does. And that's much of a deeper consciousness of that. But it does play on how we react, how we intrigued, how we intervene, how we get involved in certain tasks, and how we manage ourselves.
It's so true, so true. And even greater than that, not greater, but another aspect of that is epigenetics, I think. I'm not sure how you say it. But it's related. You know, recently there's been a couple of studies have come out that have said that trauma and stress that your ancestors experienced are passed down genetically to their descendants. So it goes beyond just a cultural aspect. It actually has a genetic difference in as far as how you've evolved as a person, you know, to every, down to your cellular, you know, aspect, literally, you know, you get your DNA test and it's literally related to, your family's, history from, you know, the beginning of time.
Yeah. Because, you know, the thing is about DNA is much unknownness. I have a scientist who's a friend of mine, Dr. Caleb Wilson. He's up in New York now. He used to be with the University of Pennsylvania. He's an avid researcher on genealogy. And they had a genealogy conference here in D.C., and he was part of that research, and they talked about the human genome. It's kind of sort of human genome project, but a different variation. We talked about how certain factors in DNA and how learned behavior, DNA behavior, and acquired behavior relate to how we are and how we interact with our society. So part of that was not necessarily what his research is on, but part of what I took from it was that in saying this is that it's like, you know, you put on a music and you play a song, you remember the words, you remember the beat, you remember everything in it. If you broke everything down to your favorite song, you would really be amazed that you understand every single beat, every action, every word in that song. And you could, in your mind, you recorded that. So DNA is the same way. It records every single vibe of your history, from your family all the way to the existence of your DNA code. The code was first created, which goes back millions and millions more years, and humans have, I think, tried to or figured out where we came from. So everything's in that code. So there's no way people can tell me that, okay, I am myself. No, there's no way. You're not yourself. You are a collaboration of everything that you are on this planet up until that point. And being that there's billions and billions of people in this world, that's why you can put two or three people next to each other and they can say the same thing, make the same decisions, even look the same way. Because there's so much manipulation and change that can occur in DNA where things have to be the same. You know, from a mathematical standpoint, if you multiply a number to a certain amount of times, you can find that there are some cohesion where the numbers are the same in the same time, the same exact moment, on the same measurements and everything, because that's mathematics. So I tell people sometimes that, you know, and people tell you, well, you look like somebody else or you have a twin. It's probably true. You do, because there's so much manipulation in the DNA code where there has to be some things where there are similarities. The fact that there's somebody on this planet that makes the same decisions you do, live in a similar environment, have the same mindset, the same dreams, the same hopes. And it's kind of interesting because there's nothing new on this planet.
Right. Exactly. There's nothing new. And if the fact that we are also actually down, if you look at how many different, you know, how much data is in DNA, that we're all pretty much the same with like such a minute difference that that's why we're human. You know, I'm not like some far Neanderthal or something. Like we started from one and then we've branched off, but we're still one species. And so if you say that our DNA tells our story of our, you know, from existence, that means that we are all carrying the same DNA pretty much, and that we're all very similar. And that's why you find patterns in our physical bodies, our brain chemistry, as far as, and even forms, you know, the physical form of our brain. Everything is so universal on overall that you can predict human behavior, you know, there's scientists who do that, you know, we're very predictable. And it's interesting because like you're saying, there's someone out there just like you, but even on the everyday status there, when we play music, we're all going to hear that beat. You know, most of us are going to be bobbing our head on the same beat. We're so predictable, you know?
Yeah. Cause music is math.
Yeah.
And to you know, extravagate on your point is that also, like, everything, I wouldn't say everything, let me take that back. Majority of the groups of animals and plants and things on this planet, their DNA is part of our DNA because we came from the same planet.
Right.
And through evolution because of our coexistence with these different, you know, variety of species and things like that, we have morphed into having some of their DNA with our DNA. That's why we are adaptive on this planet as long as we've been on this planet. If we weren't, we wouldn't be adapted to planet changes because we're a part of the planet. But anyway, right. Back to STEM, because I know we get into this DNA thing.
Yeah.
But you're talking about STEM.
Related,
I can talk about
right?
science all day long. That's my life is science. But
which is awesome.
The whole important thing about the reason why STEM is very important to me because I talked about DNA, I talked about science, and I talked about space and Star Trek and Star Wars. And if anybody's seen Star Trek Beyond, go see it. I love Star Trek. It's a different, it's a little takeaway from the Star Trek universe, but it's still relevant because that movie has so much to play on, talk about what we're going through now in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, justice for all, respecting the culture.
So I should go see it.
Stuff like that. Yeah, because it touches in the movie. If you look for some things, you can see it. It touches, and Star Trek has always been like this.
It has.
Where it teaches you lessons about life. It uses science fiction to teach you lessons about life that's happening now on this planet. So I encourage everybody to go see it. I saw it twice already. So
that's awesome.
Being that and talking about STEM, I think STEM's important. I think the study about STEM has pushed into a realm where people think, okay, you got to be smart to really engage in STEM.
No,
they don't
you
understand
don't.
That every human that exists on this planet, from your birth until whatever you're doing at this various moment, you are using some part of STEM.
Exactly.
Everything that we use as humans has been engineered. Everything. Even us. We've been engineered by God or whoever you might believe in. So
right.
Everything is engineered. Everything is science. Everything is science.
Exactly.
So if you look at a perspective that everything is science, then you won't be so taken away about STEM as being something of a foreign nature. You would engage it and use it in a variation of method to encourage your child or to encourage yourself to branch out and learn more about the planet that we live on and find out more about how wonderful it is. Because I think of any time, and of course we exist in this time, right now is the most important time that we realize how important this planet is to us and try to engage and love it. I wake up every morning, I see green grass here on the East Coast. And as you know, living on the West Coast, you don't see a lot of green grass.
No grass. We see dirt and cactus and rocks.
Right. Right. Except for San Diego. San Diego is kind of like one of those
oasis. It's still beautiful. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's beautiful because it's an oasis. The other part of California is all, of Southern California is all sand and dirt. So when I lived out there, you don't see natural grass. You see planted grass they brought in, they planted. You see palm trees they brought in, they planted in that yard, and you had water. The soil is not that thick because it's mostly sand underneath, sandstone. So here, being back on the East Coast, I see all this grass and this dirt and this mud clay and everything. It's like, wow, this is earth. And then you get an understanding of, man, I really miss the green grass. I miss the trees. I miss the birds. I miss the smell of the grass. I don't really necessarily miss the mosquitoes. Zika virus and stuff like that.
Nah.
But on top of that, you realize how important Earth is and how important it's still sitting on your feet and you walk on it. And then out there in California, where it's so dry and stuff. So,
right.
You know, that's a perspective too. It's important. I say, you know, we have to engage ourselves and learn more about the planet we are. When I was a kid, we do projects about volcanoes. And, you know, we take one of those little wooden boards, we put some metal rods on it, we make it like a little, you know, telegraph machine and stuff like that.
You guys did good stuff.
Yeah, we did good stuff like that.
I never really got to do that. And I'm not that much younger than you. But
yeah,
I didn't have the best exposure to science. It was more just like some class assignments that no one was really into. You know, the teacher was just like, let's get this done because my kids don't care. You know, I just didn't feel very engaged with science. Or math, really. I had one really cool math teacher who was really engaging, but overall, I would say no. And I would say that's a reflection on the schools I went to, as well as, you know, my home environment. No one was talking about math or science, you know?
Right. And the thing is, I mean, just so everybody to be clear, I didn't grow up in a house of scientists. I think that, you know, it's a child. The vision that you have now, because you weren't in the same environment as me to listen and see what I learned. it made you who you are. You were born right. with specific thoughts and dreams and creativeness that made you who you are. Ever since I've known you, I thought you remind me of an Indira Ree and one of those ladies. You know, you, nature and stuff like that. That's your call. It's still science. It's a variation of what I am. I'm a technician. I'm an engineer. I'm a computer engine. I'm a computer guy. I'm a philosopher. I'm a publisher. Whatever. All that stuff is me. I'm just a whole bunch of stuff. Because I think I never really focused on one thing. I love it all so much that I told people I'm a master of everything. I'm a craftsman of everything, a master of nothing. Because everything I come across, I try to craft it. But I never wanted to be the master of it all because I think it's not up to me to be the master. I think the master is us all. Mm-hmm. Because if one person hold the key to that one trade, then everybody be lost. Because then if that person went away, then everything has to be learned again. I think we all should be masters of trades to everything. And then it doesn't matter if you learned it at a young age. You can always learn it later.
It's never too late. You can learn forever, you know? And that's why the idea that we're all a part of this, that we're not all separate for, you know, as far as only certain people get to create things and the rest of us are consumers. If we actually are all engaged, it will have a greater experience and more opportunity to adapt and change and evolve because we have a diverse viewpoints and minds all coming together. And that's why it's really important for STEM to be something that my ideal would be for science and STEM to be something that people talk about, like they talk about sports, that it's just like everyday talk. It's something people are interested in, something that they enjoy and relate to, you know, something like that, or even entertainment. Because we need all these minds. And like you said, you don't want only one perspective. You don't want only one group of people to have the keys to innovation, you know, because that's such a limited perspective. I know that you're involved with something called FIRST Robotics. I wanted to talk about that real quick. My daughter is into robotics. She took a robotics class, but she really didn't feel the coding aspect about it. But she got to create an actual robot that she named Tane. And if you ever speak to her, she can go on and on about how she built Tane, you know, like pieced it together. She chromed it. She cut it. She did everything and drew it out with a group of people. And I would think it's one of the things that she's been most excited about recently as a, you know, a 10-year-old girl. So, so with that in mind, that's also why I wanted to talk to you, because I want to know what is FIRST Robotics? Like, what is that?
Well, FIRST Robotics, it's a very engaging organization, and just to let you know and let everybody know, that's a lot of organizations out there. So if FIRST Robotics is not in your local area, in your school, you can engage your school. You can go to FIRST Robotics website, usfirst.org. I think they changed it to something else. It might be still usfirst.org. But recently they went through a lot of changes for the website, and they changed it. So FIRST Robotics was started by Dean Kainem. So Dean Kainem was the inventor of Segway. And everybody knows who Segway is. And just give you a good connection with me and Dean Kainem, which Dean Kainem doesn't know. And I think I've seen him in person last year. I saw him and two of his, and also the president of FIRST. I met him in person here in Maryland. He came to our to our championship matches here. So Dean Kaney, when he was designing the Segway device, which is, you know, worldwide, everybody knows the Segway. You come to D.C., you want to ride around the Capitol area. They got, you can rent Segways on Groupon, and you can ride.
And Segways are like those things that you like balance on, and it rolls.
Yeah, yeah. Segway uses mechanics, and it uses magnets to adjust with the way the Earth rotates around the Sun. We have a
really
That's
how it works.
It uses magnetism. It uses because magnetism keeps gravity keeps us in one place on this planet, because gravity keeps us from floating out in space. So it uses electromechanical and gravity and stuff like that. It's a lot more stuff than I'm talking about, but it uses some of the factors of that. So anyway, back in 2001, when I was in Detroit working, because my background is very diverse in engineering, I worked for a company for a short time, and they were doing prototypes with Delphi. And anybody know anything about, you know, mechanical devices? Every mechanical device you have at home, including your phone, different suppliers make different parts. Yet Apple might have their name on it, or Google might have their name on it, a Motorola or
right, or just like off-brand shoes, right? The same manufacturer,
exactly.
They just put a brand name on it.
Exactly. So from a manufacturing standpoint, when he was doing the prototypes for Segway and production for Segway back here in 2001, I think Segway had just been out maybe a year or two, or 2 years or whatever. I went to a conference, and I met a couple of suppliers at Delphi. And Delphi did the housing for the Segway device. So if you're riding a Segway, the controller that you put your hands on top, that housing was first manufactured by Delphi. But to do that housing, you use sonic vibration technology. Sonic vibration technology is basically the same technology that you feel in an earthquake. When the metal in the earth and the different crusts, they shake because of tension.
Oh,
so what
okay.
Sonic
like
does
tectonics.
Is vibrations, the vibration technology. And we vibrate the different components from the top section of that housing to the bottom section so that it's hermetically sealed. That means that it won't leak. It's basically joining the two parts together as they should be, one component, instead of having them cut in half and, you know, and then spliced and produced in a cavity and a mold. They're put back together again.
And
so
this is for
–
oh, go ahead.
This is for the Segway.
Yes.
And I learned when I looked at it, I said, this looks like the Segway device, because I've seen the drawings of it.
Yeah.
So I did the sonic vibration welding for the Segway housing on the top part of the Segway bike. So that's my connection to Dean Konin.
Oh, very cool. So you actually are part of the.
Worked on the Segway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dean Konin started after he, you know, he's an engineer, has a vast past. I'm not getting discussion about his past. You can look it up on Wikipedia, but everybody here. But Dean Kaney is an engineer. He's an engineer. He's a scientist. And he's known for a lot of different things he's done. So he decided, he said at the time, well, we need to start an organization that helps kids and adults and everyone just learn more about science. So he started FIRST, U.S. FIRST. And United States something engineering, technology, I forgot exactly what it stands for. I should know as much as I spend time with FIRST, but put myself on the spot right now.
I can Google it.
But yeah, and everybody can Google it. But it basically, it's an organization, a nonprofit to help kids, adults, the whole world learn more and engaging with STEM. And we have four different divisions with FIRST. We have Junior Lego League, which are for like 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. And they build these little Lego characters. And they joined with Lego League a long time ago. It used to be another company, but they kind of broke off from FIRST and started their own group. And then he brought in Lego to fill in the gap. So Lego League is the beginner part of robots. You got Lego League, Junior Lego League, and so Junior Lego League is for like from 8, 9, 10-year-olds. And then you have FIRST Tech Challenge, which is for the junior high school kids up to around high school level.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have FRC, which is FIRST Robotics Challenge, which is for the high school kids. So the difference between the four leagues is that the two bottom leagues, Junior Lego League and Lego League, are basically Legos. They have a table. They play Legos. They build Legos. They do mechanical device type of obstacle courses to pick up rings and to move at certain speeds and stuff like that. But the FTC are 12 by 12 robots. They can go up high, but they can't be wider or longer than 12 by 12. They have to be inside of a 12 by 12 case, and then they have tires or whatever tire configuration you use, and motor controllers, and everything's coded for all these robots.
And then Who does the coding?
The coding is done by the kids.
Oh, wow.
Basically, there are kits that they get. They have basic codes for all the kits that are built into the controllers, and then the kids take the code and they modify the codes to fit what actions they want the robots to do. So,
to give you an example,
I put a kit together. They all got kits to come with them. So it's not like you had to create a robot from scratch, because everything has to be modulated, because it takes too long to do this if a kid does it. Some teams do build their own robot from scratch. Let me make that comment. Some kids and some groups, they have leadership of engineers and scientists who work with them and major companies and government entities, and they build their own robots. They use the kits, but then they modify and build their own kits, and they're really great robots. They are awesome. As my daughter would say, awesome sauce.
Yeah, I say that too.
At the same point, for kids who are out there who are engaging in science, who say, I don't know much about science. I live in an area that's not really scientifically included in certain perspectives. I tell them to get a kit, go first, get a kit, get somebody to put some money up, and then just start from scratch.
Let me stop you right there. Sorry, I just want to expand on that. So when you say get a kit, that's because there's a robotics, this particular nonprofit may be in their area, and you can just buy a kit from the nonprofit, First Robotics, and then if you're sponsored, you can move on and, like, develop more. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, the sponsorship helps you pay for the kits and pay for additional materials used to go to different events to compete. Logos, things like that. You want to, maybe want to advertise for certain groups or certain causes or nonprofits or whatever you may be, or the school you go to, or just to name a robot and maybe create an organization at your community to help engage kids in STEM.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm so excited about that idea.
There's a lot of companies that have been created in the state of Maryland and Virginia by kids who have created their own organizations to raise kids up in their communities to be engaged in STEM.
That is so cool.
Yes. Yeah, they build robots to go out to veterans' homes, to older retirement homes, to help older people do tasks. They do robots to one organization I was with last year at the over the University of Maryland at College Park, where we did our championship match. They built a robot to assist the firefighters and, like, this little box will roll up, and it can put stuff inside their box for firefighters, and it would keep the items cool. It had a refrigerant in it. It would put the items in there. During a fire, it was fireproof, and then they would roll it back out.
They built a
robot truck that would go to different schools and teach kids about, okay, this is what the firefighters do, and this is what the parts do, and stuff like that. It would talk. It would have horns on it. It would make sounds. It would tell you about civil defense codes and stuff like that. Yeah.
I played with Legos growing up. So this is, like, the next step that I would have loved to do. And now I'm, like, daydreaming while you're talking. Sorry. Thinking about, ooh, maybe I could do this and I could do that. You were – with all the amazing things, like, in order to – have the robot do these tasks, you have to have coding, and you were saying the kids come with like these template codes, and then the kids modify the code in order to do, like, unique task, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of software packages out there that you can use from a software designer standpoint.
Oh, cool.
And I would mention them, but I don't want to confuse people, but they just have to look up the codes and kits and stuff and do some instead of giving people everything they need to do, I want people to be curious about this stuff. Now, if you give them a couple things, they'll stick to that.
Yeah, so they sure will.
there's hundreds of coding languages out there. There's a bunch of codes that we use here in this country for robots, for mechanical devices you use for your cell phone, to your iPad, to your Roomba, to clean your floors, whatever. Your TV,
yeah.
They all use specific codes. So I engage people to go out and just read up on coding. And just give you a short synopsis. There was a story of a guy who taught a homeless guy. And the homeless guy he taught was a guy that had a science background. So let's not think that you need to know nothing about science. But you don't need to know anything about science. You need to have an understanding about simple math. to do coding, because code is formulas. It's basically formulas that add up and do a specific task. So he taught a homeless guy in New York coding, and the guy learned how to be a coder. And it's a true story. You can read up on it. You can Google it. It's on, I think what's that, YouTube?
Yeah, but I'm sure I can Google exactly that.
Like, yeah, you can. The story came out a few years ago. I think a couple of years ago, maybe longer. But the idea of coding is nothing new. Everything is coded. Our DNA is coded. Back to our DNA story. Everything is coded.
Yeah, it is.
To create or design something, there has to be a specific code for the shape, for what it does in action, for how it's the color of it, the code color. Everything is coded. Everything, including us, we have a lot of code. So I just mentioned that twice. So saying that, for robotics, each robotic has a generic code, like you said, a generic template for code, and then you program it to go 5 steps, 4 steps, raise this arm, move this lever, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are formulas online that kids can engage themselves and learn how to code. But what I want to do, and this is what I'm trying to push here in D.C.,
several
organizations, is to create a coding institute so that kids can start doing coding from K-12. Yeah, have a coding institute created so how kids from K-12 can do coding. So that when you go to kindergarten, you're not just learning how to lay on your mat and go to sleep. And when they wake up for lunch, you're actually learning viable things to get you an education and learn. So that when you get into your first grade or second grade curriculum, you learn how to do coding. You learn how to engage yourself into STEM. So that you can learn what those words and those poems and everything that you read and all those historical comments have been made throughout these different books about scholastics, you can put those together. So coding kind of helps you put stuff together. It's kind of like getting a Rubik's Cube and trying to figure out how to put the colors together. That's coding.
Yeah. You know what? It's amazing that you say that and you're doing that. Let me know if I can help you in any way. Because with coding, I was thinking it's at the point of literacy, you know. People were like, oh, well, we have to learn how to read. Now there's going to be a whole generations of people, or hopefully not more than one, who don't know how to code. And that's going to be the separation between knowing how to read and write, you know.
Yeah,
and
coding is a universal language, too. It doesn't matter what language you speak on this planet. Coding is the same
everywhere
in every country. It's the same because it's math. Math is the same everywhere.
And math would
is
have
the only
been
language
so
on
much,
this planet that's the same.
And it would have been so much more engaging and interesting if I knew that 1 × 3 + 5 + 7 means my robot's going to lift its leg. You know, that would have been way more interesting and engaging. And I think when we teach basic, easy math, like you're saying, you should be teaching coding simultaneously at the same time. You know,
from the very beginning,
because an analytical mindset. It's being able to understand concepts and formulas. You know,
and a good point you just made. Let me get deeper in what you're saying. So, from a standpoint of that kind of mindset, a lot of people think, and a lot of coaches, that you're born with certain mindsets. It's a learned behavior. Every mindset you have is a learned behavior. How you hold your hands, how you speak, how you don't speak, how you hold your head is a learned behavior. To be analytical, a lot of people are not born analytical, knowing that they're analytical, but everybody is. There are certain ways analytics shows itself in humans. Everybody's on the same curve. So when you learn a specific language or you learn how to do a specific task and you sit there with your peers, you all learn the same thing. Everybody don't learn the same way. So that's why I say coding is a good way for kids to branch out and learn more about themselves. And when you start doing problem configuration and unification at a younger level, you realize what are your assets and what you're not good at. And then from there, you kind of put the pieces together. Well, I'm good at this, I'm good at that. Let me concentrate on what I'm good at. And what I don't know, I can help maneuver my way to learn more so I can be good at that task as well. It teaches you problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
In human existence, learning problem solving is one of the best things we can do at an early age because it sets the pace of where you end up at when you get older. Because if you can problem solve at a young age and put two words together, two letters together, it helps you learn how to do verbiage and reading. It helps you learn how to do math. It helps you learn how to put
everything,
you know, bank account together and pay your credit bills and stuff like that.
Because know what it is?
It's
a better life, and it gives you that big picture. Like it's like the puzzle. You know, you finally put all these pieces together, and then you have your finished product. And people who can't see the big picture, you know, they tend to not be able to understand how all the pieces are related, you know? So for me, math was challenging once we got into the higher formulas. It's still challenging because I have no real life, concept as to what this translates to. Like, all I know is, you know, this formula, you're supposed to do this list of operations to get the number. Okay. And it has no real life connection that I've found, you know, to connect. Like, if you relate it to coding, it's like it has a real result, you know, but the way we're taught in school to just memorize mathematical formulas, you know, and then spit out a product, it makes it, you know, it's just like, it's very hard to have retention if you don't have any bigger picture to connect it to, you know?
And in your point, let me branch out on your point again. Another point you made, a good point. Everybody doesn't really learn the same. And I tell people this every day. Every human on this planet is good at math. And tell you
right.
reason, I mean, let me tell you in a second why I think mm-hmm. they are. Because, first of all, we are math. Mm-hmm. We're living organisms of mathematical equations.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the education system, the way we teach things, like I said, there's people think that you need a one-shop shop. Like, you go to Bloomingdale's and you buy your shirt. And they sell the same shirt in 15 colors. That's not the shirt for you. You look at that shirt, yeah, I like the shirt. But the colors and everything, it doesn't go for me. It's not my scheme. Education system is not that way. It's pushed down our throats as the same as six system. Now, things are changing.
Yes, they are.
Even out there in California, there's a school out in California, up in Calabasas, maybe up in the valley in L.A., that teaches kids. They put kids of different ages in the same class. Because every kid doesn't learn the same time, the same age. And these kids are being more proactive to learn on their own time the way they should learn and how they should comprehend, instead of forcing them to learn a certain way.
Right.
There's other options for kids, too. And I think that thing about coding is, in coding and science, it doesn't matter how old you are and what level you are, as the excitement level on the phone is shown by me all the time and by you, we're still engaging in this. We're still excited about this. When Star
yes.
Trek was announced coming out, I watched the
yeah.
TV a thousand times. How many people watched Star Wars last year?
So many people.
I mean, I saw the movie four times. Four times. And when the
I will confess, I haven't seen either one of these recently because I'm stuck in the past.
Yeah, you need to watch them. I watched Star Wars four times. I watched it with my daughter once. I watched it by myself three. I watched it in the high definition, low definition, whatever. Because I love science. Science excites me. It's like, it's my high. And I think
yeah.
it's important to learn what your high is in life. That's natural. And stick
right.
to it. And use
and
that
to
build
it.
What you need to build on for your report. You're never too old. It doesn't matter what situation you live in. No matter if you live in Bangladesh or you live in the South Pole. You can always learn. You can always evolve. Because human nature did not get 1.5 million years from now or further without having some kind of understanding and curiosity to build upon itself to be where we are now. Not saying that we're perfect. We're not.
Right.
But we're evolving. And that's what's important. When you're born into this world, the day you're born, the day you pass, you evolve from one point to the other, whether you like it or not. If you sit in your room and watch TV for 30 years, you're still evolving. Because the first day you watch television, you didn't know it was on TV.
Right.
After you watch television, you know a lot that was on TV the last time. So we're always evolving. I think we need to get that curiosity into the people and learn that you always can learn. It doesn't matter what your age, your demographics, where you're from, how good your English are, how good your understanding of math is. It doesn't really matter because I'm going to tell you something. I wasn't good at math. I was
ooh,
bad at math.
Not good at math, huh?
Wasn't good at math, and I was an engineer. Because, like I said, everybody learns differently. My teacher was trying to teach me her way, their way. It wasn't the way I should learn. I learned more from when I graduated college and being an engineer professionally than I learned in high school and college. I learned more now than I ever would have learned in high school and college.
because you went on your own and found you, because know what it was, you still needed to know those concepts, so you went out and and learned them on the way that you could. You know, thank goodness for the internet, because now you can pretty much, you know, prep yourself and learn. If you don't like that one tutorial that tells you how to do the Pythagorean theorem, find another one, you know, and you'll eventually get it. And it's funny that you say that, because I bring it up, but it's, I'm just going to say it. Well, the reason why I got into science originally, I was, like I've said, I wasn't good at science, or at least I wasn't engaged with science. I wasn't engaged with math. I struggled through math. I was able to get through high school and elementary with no problem, but I wasn't really retaining it. It was just like, I'm really good at cramming and then spitting out answers. And so in college, I had got into higher math, and it was like, I failed them. I had to take the class over and over. I learned later, the reason why is because when I'm learning math or something that's complicated like that, I really have to focus and put in the time and work to get the concept, and it's not something I can just like pass through. And I discovered this when I went into a nuclear operating program. You know, someone without a math or science background just had a lot of like determination and, you know, I guess spunk or whatnot. So I got into a program where they were like, well, we'll teach you from scratch as long as you can pass the basic math. So I crammed thanks to YouTube, and then I went and like passed the exams in order to get into the program, just with like pure focus, you know, like that's how I was able to do it. And what I learned, because most of my peers have more engineers or military background, they were more technically inclined than I was, I learned that just like engineering and any other job, you have your specializations. And so as long as you know the basics, you will learn what is relevant to your job. And you will just like know those formulas, and you'll have a big idea of what the overall picture is. But you don't have to be like a mathematical genius, you know?
It takes time. Everything takes time. Everybody learns differently. I've worked on rocket systems for the F-136 fighter jet system. F-35. I've worked with people who worked on, you know, engines for at Cape Canaveral on rocket engines. One of my good friends, she's a rocket engineer,
which is amazing.
It's amazing. I mean, I know people working, you know, got two of the nuclear agencies up here, you know, that work with some of the stuff you do there, and it's just amazing. I've done
everything. And I don't do that anymore, by the way, just so you know.
Right. I've done everything from a crash seat for a helicopter design for assembly to helping engineer the way pancakes resist coating on the surface and cooking pancakes during the process of making the pancake batter. I've done everything to.
That sounds cool. That sounds really cool.
For engines, right. Building turbos to make power in your house.
No, the pancakes.
Putting electronics together to make microchips in a factory in Massachusetts. I've done everything you can think of.
That's amazing.
So the diversification of what we have in ourselves can be tapped and used in our livelihoods and help fuel us in what we want to do in our career. Like I said, it doesn't matter where you start at, it's how you end up at. And it's all about what you want to do with yourself.
Right.
And everything
what do you want
lends
to do?
An educated moment.
Right? And be inspired. Be at the very least, be curious. If you're always curious, that by itself will be motivation. You know, if you can, people think, what will motivate me? Be curious. That'll motivate you. And I wanted to say, I really appreciate your time, and I have to let you go because I know you still have to do your Saturday. But before you leave, what I like to do is get like a feel of you just so I can go back and add it to the show. So what would you say were three songs or three artists that are your top artists? And I'm going to put that in the soundtrack on this podcast.
Three artists, I would say It's funny, though. I was watching Star Trek, and that song of Star Trek and the Beastie Boys, I love that song. I can't think of it right now. It's on the Star Trek soundtrack.
Which Star
I listened
Trek?
to the one that just came out. There's the Beastie Boy. I just read an article on loopers.com talking about it. I
Yeah,
love
look
that
it
song.
up.
It was a rock. It's a rock song. But see, people think that I love R&B and jazz. I love all music. So three artists. I don't know if I got three
Or
particular
three
artists.
songs.
Three songs. let me think. Let me think for a second.
Yeah, no worries.
It's kind of hard for me to think.
I know. And you know what? It makes you have to be so honest because you don't have time to think.
Right, I got to sit here and think about it. It's a song by Pat Benatar in 1983. What's the name of the song?
Or a chorus.
Who
and then
am I to disagree?
Oh, I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs.
Everybody looking for something. These dreams are made of these. That's it. Okay, Pat Benatar. That's about 40
years
ago.
That's one of my
ago.
Favorite songs.
Let's see, 30 years ago. Obviously, another song. I would say soundtrack to original Star Wars. I love that. I don't know if you can put it on your show, but what else do I like? What song do I like? I'd say like this. There's a new show. I don't really have a favorite artist. I'm thinking of something that's really cool music that you can put on your show that reminds people of me. Because I'm as mysterious as I am. I love mystery, like Mystery 3000, that show you did on TV back in the day.
Did you know they're bringing it back?
Yeah, bringing it back. I heard it. I read it this morning, bringing it back. Mm-hmm. So, a Mystery Series 2000, whatever you call it. But I like stuff like that. So there's a show that just came out. It's called Stranger Things. It's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I just started it yesterday.
The soundtrack for that. I love that song. That's it. Those three right there are me. Because they're quirky, they're different, and that's what I am.
That's awesome.
And I would say that because
that's
pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Awesome sauce. Well, I appreciate your time, and I had fun. I always have fun, and I am so excited. And you should come on the show again some other time. And if you have any friends you think would want to
come
on the
again.
Show.
Yeah. Anytime you want me to come back and talk about doing things, great. I love to.
Good. That was so awesome.
Bring some people too.
Yeah, bring some friends or just tell me who you think would have fun on the show. And especially women. I don't really know that many women in STEM. And so if you know any, I would love to talk to them and get their perspective as well.
I know plenty of engineers, PhD engineers, scientists. I know a whole bunch, and I can definitely set some up with you. We can talk offline, and we can set up a series to talk about STEM. And I know some really cool, very smart women that can really
That's
be good
amazing.
Guests on your show.
Yay! All right, then.
And hopefully one day my daughter will be on there, too, because she grew up and she'd be a cool, cool STEM girl, too.
Oh, yeah, that would be so cool. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying goodbye. I am, but thank you
that's
so
it.
Much.
Hey,
oh, know what you can say before I stop recording? Can you say the name of my show? Oh, go ahead.
Let's do a tribute to Leonard Nimoy and do your fingers out there in the Star Trek universe. Take your fingers and spread them apart and do the V. And live long and prosper, everybody. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. That. Awesome.
Yeah. So repeat the name of your show and I'll repeat it back to you so we can get that straight. I want to make sure I'm being correct with this. So.
And you can say whatever you want, but I want you to say your name and that you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Steph with Steph. I know that's a lot, but or just a Dope Science Show. Maybe that'd be easier.
Okay, this is Dave Beck, and I've been on a Dope Science Show with the dopest girl I ever known in my life, Ben Diego. And her name is, say it again.
Science Steph with Steph.
Science Steph with Steph. That's right. She's a great lady, guys. I hope you tune into her show. And please, if you want to know anything about science, U.S. First, go to usfirst.org. Also, look at the National Science Foundation's website. There are 8 colleges and universities around the country, including the University of Southern California University of California, Los Angeles, that have a National Science Foundation grant. to do science stuff in the community and science research. Thank you very much.
Oh, one more thing. Do you want anyone to follow you? Do you have a Twitter, or how can people find you if they want to connect with you?
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter is CoachamFilms, CoachamFilms. I don't have my name on social media except for Facebook. And my Instagram is Cole Photos. I'm a photographer as well. I take pictures. So Cole Photos, ColeePhotos.
Very cool. I'll put that down in the notes as well, so people can just click that. And have a great Saturday.
Have a great Saturday, everybody. Remember, you are science, so do engage it. Don't be scared of it. Have a wonderful weekend.